You're listening to All The Best. My name's Tess Lawley, and for our final summer series episode, the Melbourne Collective is bringing you stories of bravery. From standing up for what you believe in, to being yourself no matter what it takes, and chasing your dreams, a few brave souls have agreed to share their stories with us today. War has for centuries been an arena for a particular type of bravery. And our first story is about the bravery of one particular soldier, though not on the battlefield. Michael Bryden produced this piece about his own grandfather, as told by his mother.
Oh, I can remember Ho, Ho, Ho Chi Minh, dare to struggle, dare to win. I can remember, I can remember a lot of the songs. We shall overcome, we shall overcome, we shall overcome someday. Deep in my heart, I do believe we shall overcome someday.
We shall overcome, we shall overcome, we shall.
Hello, my name's Anne Bryden. I'm a retired teacher and I'm the daughter of Gordon McPherson. He was... he had grown up in country Victoria. He was from a very large family. They were exceedingly poor. He used to walk to school often without shoes. When he became of age, it was the outbreak of World War II. His father before him had been a soldier in World War I, and he felt that it was the right thing to do to sign up, to become a part of the army to fight against Hitler. When he came home from the war, he married a teacher, my mother, and then he was eventually a farmer on a soldier settlement property in Western Victoria. He didn't have the benefit of a big education, and so on scant information very often, he made up his mind about how he felt about politics, how he felt about religion, how he felt about everyday life, how he felt about anything really. And I felt that he was making quite a strong stand by aligning himself publicly with the peace movement. Okay, on this particular day, we were protesting about the Vietnam War for all sorts of reasons. Many of us were against it, and we were particularly against conscription. We didn't like people being called up and ordered to go into the army, and the consequence ultimately, if they didn't, was jail. So we would have protests at the time that people had to register, and we'd wear little badges which said, "Do not register for national service," and we'd have placards and signs. We were standing on the steps of the GPO, and the Commonwealth Police, because it was a Commonwealth law that we were calling into question, were waiting in the little laneway beside the GPO, and they were about ready to spring. A friend of mine, Wendy, came along, and we'd been protesting for some time and were getting pretty tired. The placards were getting pretty heavy, and my father was in the crowd, but he understood that we weren't having a go at soldiers. We were just against the concept of this particular war. And I felt that it was a most courageous thing when he stepped forward and said that he said, "I'll hold the placard." And he took it and he stood with the other protesters. And he was a guy, you know, he would have been in his late 50s at that time. Everybody else was in first or second or third year uni. So I was always proud of my dad for doing that, because in the context of his life, it wasn't a particularly brave thing, because, like, he'd faced bullets during the war, he'd faced bombs during the war. But he was prepared to stand up with a group of people who were much younger than himself, people who he didn't know, but who he actually agreed with. And he was prepared to stand up to say, right, you know, this is what I believe. I'm on the side of these people, knowing that it would probably earn him the condemnation of the community in which he lived. And so that was why I found it to be such a brave thing for him to do.
They said, we are not afraid. And the young people taught everybody else a lesson. All the older people that had learned how to compromise and learned how to take it easy and be polite and get along and leave things as they were. The young people taught us all a lesson. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. We are not afraid. Today!
That story was produced by Melbourne Collective's supervising producer, Michael Bryden. From a war fought with soldiers to the war within, our next story is about doing perhaps the bravest thing of all, being yourself.
Hey babe, just sending you a message to fill you in on some things that I'm going through and feeling, and I want to make sure that some of the important and brilliant people in my life are up to speed. Basically, I have for a long time, to not that much of a surprise, been experiencing some gender identity stuff, for lack of a better word. And I'm becoming comfortable in identifying as a transgender person. I have no gender, neither female nor male. I am agendered, but I am staying in this body. No surgery for me. I just wanted you and a few other people to know, because I feel like I want to be honest, and more importantly, I feel safe enough to be honest with you. Nothing is too different. I've just started to feel a lot more comfortable in myself since telling people. My one favour I ask is that people now use gender-neutral pronouns when talking about me or to me, so they and them, instead of he or him, she or her. I will still use female bathrooms when disabled ones aren't accessible, as uneasy as that makes me feel, but that's just how it is. I will also be binding my chest from time to time. Sorry to tell you via text, it's just easy to get it all down. If you have any questions, feel free to ask. I'm not really offended by anything ever. There's no such thing as a stupid question. And that's about it. Yeah, that's the text I sent to you and a few other loved ones.
How did it feel sending that message?
It was like the weight of the world fell off my shoulders, and it was great. Yeah.
What was the weight that was on your shoulders?
Maybe a sense of dishonesty with myself and the people around me. Discomfort, absolute discomfort. Just from pretending to be something I absolutely was not.
This is my friend, Frankie. Although that's not their real name, this is their real story. A few months ago, I got that text that basically said that the person I'd known for well over 15 years was perhaps not exactly who I perceived them to be. And in fact, now they were finally themselves. Neither male nor female, agendered, and possibly the bravest person I know.
I always felt a little out of place. I wasn't aware that there was sort of anything that I could do about it. I had just sort of accepted the fact that I was going to have that kind of anxiety my entire life. I, at the same time, had, you know, a lot of support from my family in that they let me wear boys' clothes. My mum bought me boys' clothes from the boys' section at Target all the time, and that sort of thing. So I was enabled by my parents, which was awesome. So I never felt any, you know, less love from anyone because of it, but I always knew that it was different. I can trace, you know, these sort of thoughts back to when I was in kinder, I could almost say. Yeah, just never feeling like I was, you know, one of the girls, always feeling uncomfortable about little things like going to the bathroom, stuff like that caused me a great deal of anxiety when I was, you know, in my, you know, early primary school days to now.
How did you come to this conclusion of, like, I'm gender neutral, I'm not in either side, I'm not swapping, I'm not doing this? You know, if it is any kind of conclusion, how did you come to it?
I guess it's like many things that have happened in my life over the past few years, and it's the most embarrassing admission, but Tumblr. Just reading, you know, commentary on Tumblr and discussions that my friends have on there regarding gender and feminism and all this kind of stuff, led me to many different sources of information that have told me that I don't have to settle for one gender. I don't have to be anything specific. You know, has taught me that I can be any gender I want in the body that I have. And I guess finding, you know, my partner at the moment, who is the most lovely, lovely babe in, you know, in the world, who made me feel comfortable right off the bat, just having early discussions really early in our relationship about it. And, you know, she didn't really know much about it at all. But straight away was sort of like, you know, if you want to start saving for top surgery, we can, and all this sort of great stuff. Having some solid support, solid friends, all that sort of thing has been absolutely amazing. Yeah, I'm super lucky.
What has the reaction from your friends and family been like?
Friends, the ones that I've told, it's just been amazing. Some of them was sort of like, yeah, whatever, as if we didn't know, sort of thing. Some, you know, the rest have just been like, yeah, I don't really know much about it, but thanks for telling me, and I'll learn. Family, I haven't really tackled too much yet. My parents, I've sort of just started to talk to them about things, you know, talk to them about ideas of transgender, talk to them about body hair, talk to them about feminism, all this kind of stuff that they need to get their head around before they're kind of thrown in the deep end, I think, which is fine by me because, you know, they've loved me for everything else I've been. They won't be as surprised with my own experience of it, but the overall kind of idea of transgender they will struggle with, I think. I honestly don't think they will mind it that much at all. I think little things like, you know, introducing me as their daughter, stuff like that is what they would struggle with most. But then again, that's not stuff that I'm worried about. You know, if they feel more comfortable introducing me as their daughter, and I understand in a small country town that's probably going to be necessary at times for them, I wouldn't hold it against them at all. It's just, I know they love me just the same, and it's what you've got to do to make yourself feel more comfortable and more safe. I remember going to Queensland on a family holiday once, and it was really the first time I'd experienced misgendering, because I was like a little boy. I looked like a tiny little boy. I had short, spiky hair with blonde tips, and they've like the fringe spiked up. And boys' clothes, and I remember going to the theme parks, and, you know, the ride operators would be like, you know, do you and your son want to sit up the front, to my dad, and my dad would be like, he'd look at me and, you know, give me the nod, which was really sweet of my family. They always just sort of gave me the nod, which was nice. They never made a big deal because they knew that made me more anxious.
What's that experience like when you're misgendered, when someone calls you a gender you're not? How does that make you feel?
Just crappy. There's not really any other word for it. It just feels crap. Of course I'm used to it, and I expect people to do it. I particularly expect people to refer to me as female often, but it still doesn't feel very nice. It particularly doesn't feel very nice when people misgender you, then feel the need to correct themselves and apologize, which I get quite often. People will say, you know, oh, that, you know, that this gentleman over here is helping me, and then I'll turn around and they'll go, lady, I'm really sorry, you're beautiful, and that is just, you know, you don't need to apologize, because you know they don't know they've offended me, but they have, but in a different way than the way they think. Yeah. It's taken me quite a while to get my head around things, and I've lived in this body as this person for a very long time, so it's gonna take other people even longer to get their head around it. So you've just gotta wait for them to catch up. I'm not in any rush.
After this shaping of your identity that you've gone through, how do you feel now?
I feel liberated. I feel like even when I'm just by myself, I feel more comfortable knowing that people know. I feel more comfortable knowing that, you know, I can have hairy legs and I love them, and there are people in my life who also love my hairy legs.
Yeah, I love Frankie's hairy legs.
Just being able to have that discussion with people is really good. I don't really know. It just feels fucking awesome. Yeah. I think I've still got a long way to go. You know, I also think I'm excited as well. I haven't started to bind my chest yet, because the binders that I've bought off the internet have been all, you know, the wrong size. But I'm excited to get the right size one someday, and, you know, step out onto the street with a flat chest. I'm excited for people to start using, you know, preferred pronouns all the time, and that feels cool. I'm excited for people to talk about it more, and for it to just become normal with my friends, and that's fine. I'm really just super optimistic about something for the first time in a really long time. And it's just, yeah, it's exciting. It's really exciting.
For me, what makes Frankie such a remarkable person is how normal they are. What seems like the gutsiest decision to me is part of Frankie just being themselves. And that's the story I wanted to share with you. The remarkable normality of my friend Frankie.
I've never really seen myself as brave. I think maybe a little, maybe a tiny bit, but in saying that, I think it takes a lot of bravery to practice self-love and self-care, and that's the only thing that's brave about what I'm doing right now. I feel so supported by all my friends that, you know, telling people so far hasn't really required too much bravery, but telling myself required a lot, and continuing to love myself requires a lot of bravery.
And I would like to extend my own heartfelt thank you to Frankie for sharing their story with us and allowing me to produce that piece. You're listening to All the Best. My name's Tess Lawley, and today the Melbourne Collective is bringing you stories of determination, moxie, and bravery. Bravery so often rears its head when a decision needs to be made, and many of us face our most difficult decisions when thinking about our careers. Should your life's work be about creative and meaningful expression, or just paying the bills? All the Best contributor Emily Woods followed an aspiring band on their biggest tour yet to answer this question.
Industrial chook locked in a cage, cooped up so long, it gets filled with rage, it bulges her eyes.
Hi, I'm Maisie from Ensemble Formidable. We applied for Woodford in, I think, like March, and I really didn't expect to get in, so I didn't really think about it. And then in August, we found out that we got in, which was incredibly exciting. So then we quickly put together a tour and applied for a grant. We were lucky enough to get that too, so it's just been a whole bunch of wins, really. Sean, our drummer, has, up until getting on the plane to get over here, had never been on a plane before, hadn't left the state. So I was expecting, you know, tears, just general tantrums. but no, it's been great. He's been awesome. I think he likes traveling.
Everything except the meal was good. I highly recommend Ace Ventura Pet Detective as an on-flight movie. The costumes are very strange here. There seems to be a lot of nudity.
This power drips in her eyes. She's a beast, maximize her beak in the sky. With alien intelligence, she brings the pain. This injustice has mutated her DNA.
Yeah, I just had to convince myself to stop being such a bastard and go out and do things, and I did. And it was interesting. I meet new people, one of which apparently lives in a forest but won't tell me what forest she lives in.
You always do your first gig to no one, and you have to do that in your hometown, and then when you're going well in your hometown, you leave your hometown, you got to go do that in every other town. So, you know, this tour is, we'll lose lots of money, but hopefully we'll make a few people happy in each town we go to, and then we can go back to those towns and have better gigs and bigger gigs and slowly build a fan base over East as well. Probably not brave, it's probably just stupid, but that's what you have to do when you're a musician. You just have to make these stupid decisions that are really fun but probably really stupid. So yeah, we spent $20,000 getting over here and on the 3 weeks, and we'll definitely be working that off when we get back home.
Feathers and hair, humanity failed, it took a baby's away. Broke a beacon of wings and locked her up in a cave. Now humans are the ones that are out for the picking, cause industrial chook is not a free-range chicken. Industrial chook.
Hard enough getting us all in the same room together to rehearse when we're in the same town for 2 hours a week. So, yeah, getting us all a couple of thousand k's away and all playing gigs together is a pretty big feat, really, but you know, it's worked so far, so
it's also like quite a good way to see new places. Like if you're playing gigs, you'd meet people that you might not otherwise meet, or get opportunities you might not otherwise get. So I think it's quite good in that respect. I think we're actually enjoying having the opportunity to play with everyone a lot. So I think it's quite good for the band to like spend a bit of time together playing, and then also like getting to know the other band members. We don't all know each other that well, so it's nice hanging out with everyone. Earn a living off music in this country is pretty impossible, especially for a band of our size. We've got 8 people. If we wanted to ever, you know, have this as our one job, then we'd need to be touring internationally constantly, which would be amazing if we could make that happen. But yeah, you know, it's just the reality. If you like absolutely smash it in Australia and top the charts, I think then the average income for a musician in a 4-piece band is about $20,000. If you're like, you know, top of the ARIA charts,
yeah,
loving life,
yeah,
you get a pittance still, and then you can't really repeat that success the next year.
A lot easier with lots of people, because I just can't imagine doing this solo. I think it would just be, you would just have to put your heart out there so much and be so confident in what you're doing, whereas we can all kind of ride it out with each other. And you know, if someone has a bad day or like plays badly, you know, there's 7 other people, and it kind of works. If you're a solo artist, you really can't do that.
We hope that these stories of bravery have convinced you to be brave, to be yourself, and to take chances. Or at the very least, we hope you've enjoyed our Melbourne Collective summer series. This episode of All the Best was produced at Syn Media in Melbourne in association with FBI Radio in Sydney and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Thanks to the Melbourne producers who contributed to this episode, Michael Bryden and Emily Woods, and to all the brave souls who featured in our stories. Our features executive producer is Maren Winchester. Our production manager is Carly Ann Keneally. Our executive producers are Jordana Caputo and Belinda Lopez. And I'm Tess Lawley, the features executive producer for the Melbourne Collective. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. Join us next time for more stories from around Australia, right here on All the Best.